Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Thank you for being here. Welcome. We're starting a new Go show here. This one's a little different. Sorry, I'm having trouble with my collar here. It's a letter written to, it's addressed to the wife of a lay monk on Sado Island. But you can tell as he's discussing this letter that he's addressing both of them, she and the lay priest. Just as a matter of context, the reason I say this is a little bit different, it'll be interesting as a study as to how Nichiren uses his own life experience to help not only to validate the Lotus Sutra and his position as a reformer in the Buddhist practice of his day, but also the way that he teaches in order to convince and convert. See, when he was banished to Sado, it's a northern island off of the coast of Japan, this was a place where a lot of the advances, both in education and in structure, societal structure and so forth, didn't quite make it out to the island of Sado. So as a result, the people there were less sophisticated than those of the mainland, which Japan itself, you could argue, is an island. But it's a rather large island, so it's a nation. It is the seat of government is there. Any advances that are made in education or governance or modes of, animal husbandry, food, societal advancements, they're slow to reach out into the country, and certainly on an island like Sado, they would be cut off in very real terms. And so the ruler of that island would be someone who occasionally would travel to the mainland as a representative of the island, kind of like a senator would be here, would actually take orders from the government in Kamakura or wherever it happened to be at the time. So anyway, unsophisticated area, rudimentary living, but Buddhism had traveled there as well. But again, the sophistication and the study and the debates on Buddhism and stuff, that all happened on the mainland. So the island and islands like this that were more isolated often didn't even hear of things of that nature. So they just plod along doing what they're doing. This is all to say that when Nichiren was sent to Sado, he wasn't actually sent to Sado. The government in Kamakura was sick of his troublemaking because he was a nonconformist, and they gave him over to this ruler who happened to have Sado as his prefecture. And they said, whatever his name was, Joe Bob, whatever, will you take this troublemaker and just put him somewhere on your land and get him out of our hair? So this is how he was sent to Sado. Now you can imagine that the leader or the ruler of Sado was equally unsophisticated. And so he just gathered his brutes and, said, take this monk and put him in some shack and, he's a troublemaker, so keep him away from everyone and so on. So as a result, Nichiren ended up living in a very dilapidated shack that was probably meant for some agrarian tools and feed, and wasn't really meant for habitation, but at least not for long, maybe in warmer months. You hear Nichiren's descriptions in the in other Goshos about how you could see through the planks on the wall. It's barely more than a small barn, right? So several months, about 5 months or so after he's in this shack and barely surviving, he gets moved for whatever reason to a residence, to Ichinosawa, I think is his name. This is much better lodgings. And from there, the donations that come to Nichiren, food and clothing and so forth, are abundant, more than Nichiren can use. So he's able to distribute that as a form of wealth. So he's kind of well received there, again, albeit amongst unsophisticated folks. And now we get to the meat of this letter. In Nichiren's time, the Buddhism practiced at the time was very firmly rooted in this practice of chanting Amida Buddha's name. The people of the time just did it as a matter of course because they were raised into this thinking. This wasn't a new form of Buddhism. This was hundreds of years old, and they that even the teachers of this Nembutsu style practice, the pure word, the pure land teachings, and the more esoteric, the Zen teachings. But let's just stick with the Amida thing. Amida Buddha was a creation of Shakyamuni's in his expedient means, his storytelling, in order to investigate the way the mind works in our human lives. And so in Buddhist parlance, you will often hear that these are emanations of Shakyamuni Buddha. What that means is that these are not real things or real people. They're conceptual ideas that Shakyamuni created as thought experiments to for people to understand the way that their awakening would function in their lives, right? And so Amida Buddha was a construct that he was able to investigate that liberation from this earthly realm to a beautiful Buddha realm. But that's all it is. It's a facilitator of sorts, a storytelling facilitator, much like we have in the West, Aesop's fables and other stories to help explore social and ethical ideas, right? So to follow Amida Buddha is missing the point entirely because you're not supposed to. Shakyamuni is the teacher, the founder of Buddhism. That's the only person to set your mind to as far as earthly example of for your life. To take on one of these mystical, it's like following Peter Pan. You can learn a lot of ideas about life, conduct, ethics from studying Peter Pan, but Peter Pan's not your teacher, right? That Peter Pan is a construct of an author who created this world as an exemplar, as an expedient means, a skillful dialogue to help you to understand a concept, right? So, in essence, for hundreds of years, the original teachers who took on this Amida Buddha as a deity to be worshipped were completely missing the point. They jumped the rails of Buddhist scholarship. But as devotees and followers of those teachers then didn't know enough to question it, they just took it as read. And now we're in a state in Japan, not us now, but Nichiren's now, in Japan where it's just accepted. Nobody questions it. But Nichiren, being a very well-traveled and excellent scholar, sees right through this. It's like the emperor has no clothes, right? He goes, wait a minute, wait a minute. Hello, let's wake up now. You're not doing this right. But, people who have inculcated beliefs through generations, they're not very willing to give up their ideas, right? That any kind of alternate thinking, albeit correct, shakes up their foundations. People don't like change, especially when they've so rotely done something handed down to them. There's some strange kind of allegiance that we have to tradition, right? So this is why Nichiren encounters so much vilification and so forth. It's not that he's proclaiming anything incorrect or heinous or anything else. He's trying to correct a misshapen path that has been inculcated in the culture over generations. He's just trying to fix it, right? So this is why Nichiren often talks about how, his persecutions are just justification for what he's doing, because obviously people will resist. But at some point they have to realize, and that aha moment will come to them of, oh, that's why this has never worked. That's why that we're still suffering, because we're not doing this right. I mean, this happens everywhere in our lives all the time. But Buddhism, this is a life-altering thing, so lots of resistance. Anyway, so this residence that he stays at on Sado, these people chant Amida Buddha's name all day long. That's all they know to do, to try to get to a better land, a better life, maybe after they're dead, right? They still don't get that enlightenment is something you get in this lifetime. It just can't be. Now, when Nichiren stayed with them in their home, they started to hear his teaching, because he was always about his teaching, either writing letters or discussions with people who brought him the goods as offerings to him, and who had obvious must have had discussions. They must have stayed overnight or for several days before they headed back to the main island of Japan, right? So they would hear Nichiren talk all the time, and I'm absolutely certain Nichiren spent some time talking to them as well about their Buddhist practice and their lives and so forth, with great compassion, I'm sure. But they would have had to confront this reformative thinking in their own home, and the wife would have been around him more than the husband, because he would have to go out and do chores and do whatever he had to do to bring home the bacon, as it were. Well, the wife then would have a little less onus on her as to listen to Nichiren and his ideas, whereas the husband might be sympathetic, but the husband was more exposed to the culture on Sado, and a culture that's very deeply ingrained in its old ways and unsophisticated, and new ideas don't grow very well very quickly in that environment. So he, the lay monk, would have been more reticent to simply dive into Nichiren's teachings of the Lotus Sutra, for fear of ridicule, for fear of being persecuted himself. I mean, look, he's got an example living in his home. So he's a little reticent, right? So, getting back to this letter, it's addressed to the wife, but it's a conversation really meant for both of them to hear, although Nichiren is using the wife as his sounding board to construct, to educate. So this letter is, this is why it's an interesting letter, is because he introduces her to the history of his life. Of Buddhism, yes, we're accustomed to hearing Nichiren talk about the history of Buddhism in its entirety, but he focuses more on Japan of the day, his own life, why his persecutions, why he was sent there. You could see that this is all in a manner of getting her to also share this with her husband, or her husband to go, what is this letter, and read it for himself. So he's composing it in a way to give them both more context as to why he was there, first of all, what powers put him there. And this also would help them explore their own world, their own worldview, their own inculcated beliefs, and start to understand that they weren't dealing with Nichiren as so much an affront to what they believed, but as an exemplar of the very kind of institutional belief system that was crucifying him. Sorry to use that word, very Christian word, but do you understand what I mean? All of his hardships were the result of these staunch, unmoving opinions that were flawed. So he's educating in Buddhism, he's educating in his own history, and therefore the contemporary history of Japan. And not to fall on deaf ears, he knows that these being responsible for spreading the teaching that they themselves practice of Nembutsu, that they had a longing to belong to the scholarship of Japan, to understand the bigger picture. Remember, they're kind of isolated, so there's an enticement here by Nichiren talking about it to understand the mechanisms between the mainland and their own Sado Island, all in an effort, of course, to expand their thinking into the Lotus Sutra, to salvage their Buddhist practice into something correct and meaningful. So that's an interesting tool for us, isn't it? Because it's not uncommon to deal either with, when somebody doesn't know anything about Nichiren or Lotus Sutra Buddhism, everything is new to them. So they're willing to give it the thought experiment it deserves and see how it works in their lives. But more and more in our modern times, we're dealing with people who have somehow or other been introduced to the Lotus Sutra and its practice and have developed reticence, negative ideas about it. And so we, as monks, as bodhisattvas, have this in our environs, and we need to understand how we might get past it somehow so that we can reach people who have already built negative walls against what we're talking about. They won't hear us, certainly not clearly, if they have all this baggage in their way. So letters of this nature help us understand how Nichiren in his day was dealing with strong opposition, right? There's always in people a desire to know there's something better, even if they're staunch believers of something else, some more staunch than others, some ridiculously so. That's their choice, but how do we deal with them, right? All right, so with all of that, all 19 minutes worth, let's get into this gosho, titled Letter to the Lay Monk Ichinosawa. Oops, sorry about that. Hit the mic. It begins. In the first year of Kocho era, 1261, cyclical sign Kanototori, on the 12th day of the 5th month, I incurred the wrath of the government authorities and was exiled to the village of Ito in the province of Izu. That was the first exile. It is a place where Hyonosuke Yoritomo was banished. Yoritomo. This is the guy who established the shogunate government in Japan. Before long, however, in the third year of the Kocho era, cyclical sign Mizunoto-i, on the 22nd day of the second month, I was pardoned and allowed to return to Kamakura. Then, in the eighth year of the Bunei era, 1271, cyclical sign Kanoto Hitsuji, on the 12th day of the ninth month, I once more incurred the wrath of the government and was on the point of having my head cut off. That's an ekuchi, right? But because of certain circumstances, the execution was postponed. Instead, I was placed in the custody of the former governor of Musashi, who held the island province of Sado in the north as part of his feudal domain, right, where all the serfs lived, basically, outside of the main island of Japan. Japan had its serfs as well, but as I said earlier, Sado was a very unsophisticated place. I was sent to that island under the escort of his retainers. So, as I said earlier, the inhabitants of the island are a wild and barbarous lot, with no understanding of the law of cause and effect. Their treatment of me was indescribably rough. Nevertheless, I did not harbor the slightest resentment against them. The reason is this: even the ruler of the country of Japan, the Lord of Sagami, whom one would expect to have at least some understanding of principles, failed to investigate the circumstances of my case, though I was in fact attempting to aid the nation. Instead, contrary to all reason and justice, he had me condemned to death. Therefore, even a good man among his subjects were not to be counted upon, and so there was surely no point in hating the bad ones. They were just ignorant, right? Since the time I began declaring this teaching, I have resolved to dedicate my life to the Lotus Sutra and to spread my name in the pure lands of the Buddhas in the 10 directions. So, what does he mean by that? Spread his name. What he's saying is that he wants the energies, the positive aspects of pursuing Buddhahood and the teaching, spreading the teachings of So the Lotus Sutra, the attainment of Buddhahood in one's present form, he wants to be known in the region and everywhere beyond the region that he is a staunch advocate for this teaching. In other words, a contradiction to all of the erroneous views and incorrect teachings going on. He wants everyone to hear that someone is standing up for correctness, for the strict correct practice of Buddhism. He wants to be folklore. He wants everyone to know that there's someone standing up, that's not just rolling over to tradition. Hung Yen took the liver of his dead lord, Dukeyi of Wei, cut open his own stomach, and inserted the liver before he died. This is again, a traditional thing to demonstrate loyalty, filial piety. Yu Jiang, because his lord, Chi Po, had suffered disgrace, fell on his sword to avenge the wrong. These men went to such lengths to repay what was no more than a worldly debt of gratitude, right? Just worldly, in other words. The reason why people continue to transmigrate through the six paths for countless kalpas without ever being able to attain Buddhahood is because they begrudge their bodies and do not lay it down their do not lay down their lives for the sake of the Lotus Sutra. Now, there's another statement that might be confusing to us in this modern era. What he means by laying down their lives for the sake of the Lotus Sutra is because these people are all dealing on this instantiation of humanity as their so all religions are based this way. It's a natural I don't know what it is. It's a natural thing of samsara. The human beings, we're so obsessed with attachment, and therefore our own bodies, our existence, quote unquote, in this life, as attached to this bodiness, that whenever we want to make ritual or some kind of major offering or dedication to anything, we use our own bodies in order to validate that dedication. And we do so in a visceral, physical, earthly way. I mean, just look at the crucifixion in Christianity or any such offerings throughout all religions. Even in the mistaken belief in earlier Buddhisms of monks setting themselves on fire. It's a ridiculous anthropomorphism of the mental constructs and ideas of our lives. Yes, the mind and body are connected, but only in so much as we make causes. We utilize this earthly being, which is not just the body, never just the body. The body is never separated from the mind in Buddhist teachings. The mind is where it all happens. The body is just a vehicle for it. Okay? So to take the body as the primacy of everything is a huge error. So the idea of sacrificing actual physical body for something is just a more ingrained attachment. Do you see? The body has no value as an offering in its physical self. It only has value in its mental offering, its existence. So when Nichiren says it's because they begrudge their bodies, because they use their bodies as a tool of devotion, they miss the entire glory of enlightenment, Buddhahood. It's not in this body, it's in the mind. So lay down their lives for the sake of the Lotus Sutra. See, we make this mistake of thinking that life and our lives is this body. That's the primary fallacy of attachment. Our lives aren't in this body. This body is a vehicle for our lives. Do you see how hugely different that is? So when Nichiren say, lay down their lives for the sake of the Lotus Sutra, he's talking about a dedication in mind. Use this body as a support for your resolve. Not as a weapon for it, not as a weapon against it, not as a weapon of devotion. Let your devotion in your mind be everything, which is upheld in this samsaric existence by your body. Let it follow along. You see how different that is? The Bodhisattva, called Gladly Seen, for a period of 1200 years, burned his own body as an offering to the Buddha, Sun, Moon, Pure, Bright Virtue. And for 72,000 years, he burned his arms as an offering to the Lotus Sutra. After which, he was reborn as Bodhisattva Medicine King. Still not Buddha. Bodhisattva, never disparaging, suffered abuse and ridicule and was attacked with sticks of wood or tiles and stones over a period of many kalpas, all for the sake of the Lotus Sutra. Not because he asked to be beaten, but simply because he dedicated himself to the Lotus Sutra, he was vilified. But that's just his body. His mind was firmly in the Lotus Sutra. So all of those sticks, staves, and things that happened to his body, they were of no effect to his mental health and well-being. But he was not reborn as Shakyamuni Buddha? In other words, did he not attain Buddhahood? Did he not attain enlightenment by letting his body not be his primary concern, not being attached to his body, but rather to his enlightenment? the effects on his body were less, if at all, important. This is a level of dedication that Nichiren is talking about, a shift of perspective on what the body is and what it is for. Thus, we can see that the path to Buddhahood requires different forms of practice depending on the age. So now he just discounts it as your form of practice, your form of resolve. It's different. In the past, maybe it would bring this kind of resistance in your environs. No less because you're there. You're a part of those environs. So it's just the condition of resistance against awakening. In our present day now, he shifts, the Lotus Sutra is of course supreme as it was in the past, and yet because the way of practicing it differs from age to age in this era, even if one were to retire to the mountain forest and read and recite it, or live in the villages and expound its doctrines, or observe all the various precepts, or even burn one's arms as an offering, that person would nevertheless fail to attain Buddhahood. So that's a pretty strong statement. Andrew agrees exactly with what I've been saying about Medicine King and these offshoots of Buddhism that take that as rote and as read to offer themselves as sacrifice. That's simply not Buddhism, and it's certainly not appropriate to our day and age. Nichiren says it very plain as day here. It would seem as though the teaching of Buddhism are now flourishing in Japan. And yet, there is something strange about these teachings, though people are unaware of it. They are like insects that unwittingly fly into a flame, or birds that enter the mouth of a serpent. So he's being very gentle and compassionate here for an opposing state of mind. And he says, look, you're not alone. This is our time. This is Japan right now. The teachers of the True Word School and the adherents of the Flower Garland, Dharma Characteristics, Three Treatises, Zen, Pure Land, and Precept Schools all believe that they have grasped the law and freed themselves from the sufferings of birth and death. But the founders of these schools failed to discern the true meaning of the sutras upon which they based their teachings. They proceeded only in a shallow manner, employing the sutras in a way that fitted with their own ideas. In doing so, they went against the Lotus Sutra, which means that their teachings were not in accord with the true intention of the Buddha. They were unaware of this, however, and as they proceeded to propagate their doctrines, both the rulers of the nation and the common people came to believe in them. In addition, these doctrines spread to other countries, and many years have since passed. As a result, the scholars of this latter age, unaware that the founders of these schools were in error, look up to those who practice and propagate their teachings as persons of wisdom. In the source, if the source is muddy, the stream will not flow clear. If the body is bent, the shadow will not be straight. Shan Wu Wei and the others who founded the True Word School were already destined for hell, suffering, right? Perhaps among them, some repented in time and hence managed to avoid falling into hell, or perhaps some merely propagated the teachings of their own sutras and neither praised nor attacked the Lotus Sutra, and thus, though unable to free themselves from the sufferings of birth and death, could nevertheless avoid falling into the evil paths. But the people of this latter age are not aware of these matters, and instead all alike put their resolve in these teachings. They are like people who board a damaged ship and set out upon a great sea, or like those who, drunk with sake, lie down to sleep in the midst of fire. When I perceive this state of affairs, I immediately arouse the aspiration for enlightenment in order to save them, and began to declare my teaching. I was aware from the beginning that no matter how I addressed them, the people of the time would probably not believe me, and that I would likely, on the contrary, be sentenced to exile or execution. The nation of Japan today has turned its back on the Lotus Sutra and cast aside Shakyamuni Buddha. For that reason, not only are its people bound to fall into the great citadel of hell of incessant suffering in their next existence, but they will surely encounter great troubles in the present existence as well. That is to say, invaders will come from a foreign land, and everyone from the ruler on down to the common people will lament with a single voice. There will be an effect to these causes. To illustrate, if 1,000 brothers join together to slay their parent, the burden of guilt will not be divided among them in 1,000 portions. In other words, each one of them commits the cause fully. So each one of them, though there are 1,000, will reap the effect as though they were the only one who did it. Because we're each in control of our own karmic existence. That's why we each have our own path to Buddhahood. Rather, each and every one of the brothers must receive the full karmic retribution, and all alike will fall into the citadel of hell of incessant suffering to remain there for the space of a kalpa. And the same is true of the people of this country. So remember who I said he was talking to. So he's using the vernacular they're familiar with in order to illustrate how to practice correctly. Since numberless major world system dust particle kalpas ago, this Saha world has been the domain of Shakyamuni Buddha, Lord of Teachings. Of the vast earth, the skies, the mountains and seas, the plants and trees, there is not a single portion that belongs to any other Buddha. And all the living beings within it are likewise the children of Shakyamuni Buddha. Now, to us, that should make like a light bulb moment. Yeah, Shakyamuni was the one who founded this teaching. How could you push Shakyamuni out of the picture and follow some apparition that he invented in order to teach you? What? Buddhism is Shakyamuni Buddha. Duh. Right? But people forget to think plainly and clearly this way because they get sucked up in traditions and rituals and belonging, because we so want to be loved amongst the societal populace. Whatever they're doing, we must do. And so allegiance is pledged without question. And this is all Nichiren is doing. He's saying, hello, think about this for just a second. All of this is Shakyamuni Buddha. Why are you chanting Amida? What are you doing? Right? It's that plain to Nichiren. But it's also why it's so insulting to so many who are just wanting to belong and do what my dad did and my mom did, and you're not going to convince me otherwise. Right? The stubbornness. Stubbornness comes from what? Profound attachment. And isn't this why we're studying and practicing Buddhism in the first place? We recognize that it's the attachments that cause us pain and suffering. It's really amazing. All right, moving on. For example, it is said that at the beginning of a kalpa formation, the Big Bang, one of the Brahma kings descended from the heavens and gave birth to the various beings who inhabit the six paths. Just as Brahma is then the parent of all those beings, in the same way Shakyamuni Buddha is parent to all living beings in this world. Now he's making a reference to Indian teachings, right? Still in Hindu and so forth, the Brahma gods. This actually goes back to Vedic teachings, that the creation of the earth, the formations of the entire universe were Brahma's work, And so everything in that universe then becomes a child of Brahma, right? It just makes sense. So he's saying if you're looking to the parent, teacher, sovereign of Buddhism, you have to know that's Shakyamuni Buddha of the Lotus Sutra, not some emanation along the way. In the same way, Shakyamuni Buddha is parent to all living beings in this world. Shakyamuni is the enlightened teacher for all the living beings in this country of ours as well. It is thanks to our teacher that we can know our parent, who our parents are. It is owing to Shakyamuni Buddha that we can distinguish black from white. Yet, following the words of men like Shandao and Honen, who have been possessed by the heavenly devil, people proceed to build Amida halls throughout the country. They build Amida halls in each district, each village, and each hamlet. Ordinary citizens build Amida halls in their own house, and people make painted or wooden images of Amida Buddha to put up in their homes and dwellings. Peter Pan. The name of Amida is on everyone's lips, some chanting it in a loud voice, some chanting it 10,000 times, some chanting it 60,000 times a day. And persons with a degree of wisdom make haste to encourage others in these practices. This is like adding dried grass to a fire, or loosing the winds to blow upon the and stir up the waters. Of the inhabitants of this country, there is not one who is not a disciple and subject of Shakyamuni Buddha, the Lord of Teachings. If a person does not paint or carve a single image of Amida or of any Buddha other than Shakyamuni, or does not chant Amida's name, then, although he may be an evil person, he still has not clearly shown that he's rejected Shakyamuni Buddha. But all those people who worship Amida Buddha exclusively have already clearly shown that they have rejected Shakyamuni Buddha. Those who chant the futile formula of the Nembutsu, they are the truly evil ones. So we hit on this theme again of the nature of the intent and the attitude in what may appear on the surface to be the same cause, from ignorance, from misunderstanding, or actual, what's the word he uses? Rejection. They treat this Buddha, who is neither father nor mother, neither sovereign nor teacher to them, with the kind of tenderness one might show to a beloved wife. At the same time, they cast aside Shakyamuni Buddha, our real sovereign parent and enlightened teacher, and fail to open their mouths to recite the Lotus Sutra, which is like a wet nurse to us all. How can they be called anything but unfilial? These unfilial persons number not just one or two, 100 or 1,000. They include not just the inhabitants of one or two provinces. From the ruler on down to the common people, everyone in the entire land of Japan, without a single exception, is guilty of committing the three cardinal sins. So he's getting a little bit more adamant now as he's in this letter talking to Ichinosawa's wife, but Ichinosawa as well. So he's taking off the gloves a little bit now, and he's trying to implore upon them that they need to practice correctly, that they're following just simply out of tradition and being misled. As a result, so this is his form of shakebuku, right? Breaking their beliefs by shaking them up and showing them how illegitimate their beliefs are and how they should use all that energy to the proper practice. As a result, the sun and moon change color and glare down upon them, the earth shakes, and heavens in anger. Great comets fly in the sky, and huge fires break out all over the land. Yet these persons fail to perceive their error and instead praise themselves, saying, quote, "We unceasingly recite the Nembutsu, and in addition, we build Amida halls and pay honor to Amida Buddha." Just making things worse. Such action may seem wise, but in fact they are worthless. Suppose there is a young couple. The husband is so in love with his wife, and the wife thinks so tenderly of her husband, that they completely forget about their parents. As a result, the parents go about in thin clothing, while the bedroom of the young couple is warm and snug. The parents have nothing to eat, while the young couple's stomachs are full. Such young people are committing the worst kind of unfilial conduct, and yet they fail to see what they are doing wrong. A wife who would deliberately turn her back on her own mother and a husband who would go against his own father, are they not guilty of an even graver offense? Amida Buddha dwells in a land that is located 100,000 million worlds away and has not the slightest connection with this Saha world. However, one may claim that such a connection exists, there is no basis for it. It is like trying to mate a horse with an ox or a monkey with a dog. I, Nichiren, am the only person who is aware of this. If I should begrudge my life and thus refrain from speaking out, not only would I be failing to repay the debt of gratitude I owe to my country, but I also would be acting as an enemy of Shakyamuni Buddha, the Lord of the teachings. On the other hand, I knew from the outset that if I set aside my fears and declared things exactly as they are, I would be sentenced to death. And even if I should escape the death penalty, I would surely be condemned to exile. So great is the debt of gratitude I owe the Buddha, however, that I have not let others intimidate me, but have spoken out. Now this is what he's saying. He's not sacrificing his body. He's saying, my body isn't the way that you're going to control me, for I know the truth. No matter what you do to this body, I know the truth, and I will uphold the truth. He didn't cut off his arm and throw it at Kamakura. You see the difference? Just as I anticipated, I was exiled no less than twice. During the second of these sentences, in the summer of the ninth year of Bunen era 1272, I was sent to a place called Ichinosawa in Ishida village in the province of Sado. The headman and his men in the region to which I had been assigned in both official and unofficial matters treated me with great malice, greater malice than if I had been a lifelong enemy of their parents or a foe from some previous existence, right? Because they were instructed, this is a bad, bad person, you know, be nasty to him. Again, the same kind of authoritarian, don't question, just do as I say kind of thing. But the lay priest of the lodgings where I was put up, as well as his wife and servants, though they seemed fearful at first, privately came to look upon me with pity, perhaps because of some bond formed between us in a previous existence. The rations of food that I received from the headman were very scanty, and since I had a number of disciples with me, we often had no more than two or three mouthfuls of rice to a person. Sometimes we portioned out the food on square trays made of bark, and sometimes we simply received it in the palms of our hands and ate it then and there. The master of the house, in private, treated us with compassion. Though outwardly he appeared to be fearful of the authorities, at heart he had great pity for us, something that I will never forget in any future lifetime. At that time, he meant more to me than the very parents who gave me birth. However, great the obligations I incurred to him, I must endeavor to repay them. Even more, I must not fail to do what I had promised him. So he's talking about Ichinosawa. He's talking about the recipients of this letter, right? The lay priest felt deeply concerned about the life to come and had for a long time devoted himself to chanting the Nembutsu. Moreover, he had constructed an Amida Hall and dedicated his lands in offering to Amida Buddha. He was also afraid of how the steward of the area might react, and so he did not come forward and take resolve in the Lotus Sutra. From his point of view, this was probably the most reasonable course to take. He was housing Nichiren. But at the same time, he will without doubt fall into the great citadel of hell of incessant suffering. I had thought, for example, that even if I were to send him a copy of the Lotus Sutra, he would not be willing to abandon the practice of Nembutsu out of his fear of worldly opinion. And so it would be like combining water with fire. There was no doubt that the flood of his slander of the law would extinguish the small flame of his resolve in the Lotus Sutra. And if he were to fall into hell, I, Nichiren, would be in turn be to blame. Because he missed the opportunity to help this monk take courage and resolute mind in the Lotus Sutra. Thus, while asking myself anxiously again and again what ought to be done, I have so far not sent him a copy of the Lotus Sutra. Gone on too long. All right, so it's interesting that now he's shifted gears, and instead of speaking to them directly about what was going on while he was staying with them, he's doing so in again, an expedient means format, right? He's telling it like a story. They know full well he's talking about his experience with them, but it's easier to digest information sometimes when somebody, even if it's obvious, distances you personally from the thing itself. It's an odd manipulation. It's a samsaric thing. But Nichiren, he's a wise man, so he knows he's challenged them a lot, even by what he said so far in this letter. But I have a feeling that they already know everything he's saying. He's just reiterating it for them. As you read, they didn't look upon him badly. They evidently were serious enough in their practice, educated enough through their practice, that what Nichiren was saying made sense. All of their fears are socially based, authoritarian based. So Nichiren sees an opportunity here to save these people from their own hells, to reduce their suffering by giving them a clear path in their practice, albeit seen by them as a dangerous one. And as I said before, they have the head monk of the Lotus Sutra teachings in Japan in their house because he's in exile and being punished for doing exactly what he's asking of them. So, yeah, they have reason to fear. We'll see how this resolves in the next part. Thank you so much for listening. So much appreciate your participation. Namu myoho renge kyo. Get these videos in podcast format wherever you get your podcasts. That way you can download them and listen to them in chunks or all at once while you're doing other things. Thanks again. Namu myoho renge kyo. Take care of your health.